Genesis chapter 46, starting in verse 1. So Israel took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will also go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, their wives, in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. So they took their livestock and their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his daughters' daughters, and all the descendants he brought with him to Egypt. Thank you. You may be seated. Father, once again, we're so privileged to be able to come before you, be studying another passage from the very first book you have given us, the beginning of everything, and we're getting near the end of this wonderful book, and so many principles and concepts here, but you're building a nation, Father. And for us as believers today, you're building a church, and help us to be the people that you want us to be as far as building that church and telling others about Jesus. And help us to have understanding now as we study this passage now. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. So there's a lot of themes that are going on here, but the obvious principle is there's a storyline where they're actually moving from Canaan, which is kind of interesting because everything up to this point has been calling them to go to Canaan, and that's the promised land, the land of Israel we call the day, right? The land of Canaan. And so there they are in Canaan, but God's actually going to call them to leave that land, but as he said, you read in the text, but eventually he's going to call them back to the land. But there's a reason for this whole event in 46, this whole chapter, because it's building a nation. The nation isn't built in Canaan. The nation is built in Egypt. And then as they are a nation, then they go into Canaan. So that's kind of how God's going to work his way through it. So as far as the handouts are concerned, there's a couple things. There's a real simple outline of the first one, the brown colored one, where the family of Jacob goes to Egypt. Now, I mentioned this before, even though the last several chapters seem to be focusing on Joseph, it's still ultimately about Jacob. The story is still about Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the three patriarchs, and it's still about Jacob in the bigger picture. Oh, there are detailed things here about Joseph and the storyline about Joseph, but really Joseph is part of the bigger picture, which is Jacob. So the family of Jacob is coming to Egypt, and that's what's going to go there. And so looking at the outline, again, the brown one, God speaks to Jacob on the way to Egypt. And he's on the way to Egypt. Notice that he starts obeying before he understands it, before he still has a lot of apprehension, and we're talking about that more in the text. So that's the first four verses. He's on his way, beginning to make the move to Egypt. Now, 5 through 27, of course, is a listing. This is one of those genealogies. It's a friendly genealogy. Some of them read better than others, but this one's a pretty friendly one. Listing Jacob's family who came to Egypt. Now, that's distinguished from the couple that are already in Egypt, because Joseph already has a couple children, right? And he'll mention that in our text as well. So what we're focusing on here are those that are in Canaan moving to Egypt. There again, some are already there in Egypt. And that's verses 5 through 27. Then 28 through 30 verses are all about the emotional meeting, as you can imagine, of Joseph and Jacob, when they finally see each other after 22 years since they've seen each other. And all along, Jacob has been given the impression that Joseph is dead. And so to find out that he's alive, obviously a very emotional meeting. And then the last couple of verses, 31 through 34, Joseph tells his family of his plan. I think Joseph was planning while the brothers were coming back and forth from Canaan and asking for more food and all that, I think he had a plan all along to send them to Goshen, up in the northern part, right, you know, below the Mediterranean Sea. He had a plan all along. He had figured this out, what he was wanting to do, and he's actually going to get to implement that. He seemed to know exactly what he was going to do. He sends them to the land that he knows is going to be good for them, because of all things, later on in the chapter, he's talking about the fact that they're shepherds. And that's kind of taboo, if you will, in the Egyptian world. They see him as unclean and all that goes with it. So let's just dive in, and we'll get into the text itself. 46:1. So Israel took his journey with all that he had. So understand, this is not just a little, we're going to visit for a while. This is, you know, what it's like to move everything in your house, everything that you own. And this is not just your family. This is a whole bunch of extended family. And they'll all come in at the same time. So it's a big deal. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. So on that little map there, on the same chart on the right-hand side there, so they're coming from Hebron, which is where they're leaving from. They've been living there for some time. Jacob's been there for a while. They come down a little ways. They get to Beersheba. Now understand, there's a lot of people here, and they're not going to be able to move very quickly. They're going to be moving slowly, but they are moving, and they're making progress. He gets only so far. He gets down to Beersheba. Now, Beersheba has actually quite a bit of history that goes on there. If you remember that, there was also Isaac, for example, built an altar there. And Isaac built an altar there. It's very likely that this altar that Jacob is offering to here is the one that was built by his father Isaac a number of years ago. So he's down in Beersheba, so he's got a lot of history, and there's a lot more going on to it. Abraham also planted tree there and all that goes with that. So there's a history of the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in Beersheba. They didn't necessarily live there for a long time, but they made visits, and significant things happened to them. God spoke to Abraham there as well. So it's very important in that regard. So I think what part of what's going on here in this first verse is he's offering to the Father is a sense of thankfulness. But as you go on the next couple of verses, you're going to realize Jacob is still apprehensive a little bit. He's probably a little bit nervous about this trip. And he's got a number of reasons, that I think, why he is. And I think they're significant in and of themselves. Because remember, he remembered the prophecy. If you remember what was said during the time of Abraham, that there's going to be a time that the people, the family, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and that family, is going to be enslaved. Remember back in Genesis 15, he talked about that. Verses 13 through 16, it's basically a prophecy. They're going to be enslaved. And so he's thinking, well, is this that point? Well, yes, not immediately. They're going to go there, and they're going to have at least 30 years, which is going to be pretty nice in Egypt. But then when you get to Exodus, you're going to find out there's going to be a new Pharaoh who doesn't remember Joseph, and they're going to have a different mentality towards the Israelites, and all goes with it. So there was this prophecy given during the time of Abraham about being enslaved. And then, remember, Isaac was actually forbidden to go to Egypt. Isaac is the one patriarch that actually stayed in the land of Canaan all the time. He was born there. He lived there. He traveled, moved around within Canaan, but he never left the land altogether. And so he was actually forbidden to go to Egypt, even when there was famines and things. He said, no, you do not go. And, of course, I got to think about even Abraham. When he went into Canaan, left from Canaan to go down to Egypt, what happened to him? Well, he got himself in trouble with the king and all that at that time, with lying about his sister, his wife's sister, Sarah, and all that, half-sister, which half-sister was true, but he was still a lie and all that went with it. So I'm thinking about Jacob, and he's thinking about his father and his grandfather, and they're thinking they had a lot of pretty rough experiences in going to Egypt. So he's got obviously that apprehension there. So I think he was reluctant to leave the land of promise, but there's so much there that, you know, Joseph is down there. And you can remember Joseph and Benjamin, especially Joseph, was his favorite son or sons. And so the idea of being able to see him, obviously he wasn't going to miss that opportunity. Even though it was a big deal, he wasn't just making a little journey. He was making his forever home. He's going to end up dying there in Egypt. So that's pretty important. Verse 2, then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob, and he said, here am I. So when you think about Joseph, you know, God never spoke to Joseph directly. He spoke to him through dreams, and he interpreted dreams. God gave him information, but directly, God did speak to Abraham. He did directly speak to Isaac, and directly speak to Jacob here. So understand that the three patriarchs, God spoke to them in an interactive way where he's trying to encourage them and motivate them. With Joseph, it's different. Again, it was God directly speaking in that he's given him the dream, but you can see there's a different nature of the vision or the revelation is given there. So God speaking to Jacob specifically and pointedly to encourage him. Again, Jacob, Jacob, and he said, I am here. And that's an important thing. Look at verse 3. So he said, I am the God of your father. Again, he's emphasizing, in this case, Isaac, his father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt. Why did he say that? Because he's probably fearing to go down to Egypt. He probably remembers that God told his father, Isaac, not to go to Egypt. We mentioned it a moment ago. And now he's telling him to, don't be afraid to go to Egypt. It's okay. In your case, I want you to go to Egypt. With Isaac's case, I didn't want him to go to Egypt. Oh, okay. So this is helping Jacob to understand what's going on, how God is working through that. He said, do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation. And the last word kicks out there. They become a nation in Egypt. They don't become a nation in Israel. And it all goes with it. In fact, you think about how much time there was in the creation of this family at this point of 70 people. It took years from Abraham before he actually had Isaac, and then years before Isaac had, you know, Jacob. And remember all the years that are passing before they just have just a handful. And so now they still got several handfuls. It's beginning to grow, but not like it's going to grow when they get into Egypt. And that's actually God's plan for them to go into Egypt. So don't fear to go to Egypt. This is what I want you to do. This is important for you. And he said, I will make you a nation there. This is new information because everything in the past, telling him that I'm going to bless you, you're going to be in the land and all that with Abraham and Isaac, and as well as Jacob. But now he's giving Jacob a little bit more information that Abraham and Isaac didn't know, and that is that they're going to go into Egypt, although that Genesis 15 is the prophecy that they will go into Egypt. So there is that. But then that's actually where he's going to turn them into and become a natural nation. Verse 4, I will go down with you to Egypt, which is the very important thing to hear, that God is with you, right? And just like for us, we want to know God is with us every day and everything that we're doing. God is going to be with Jacob as he goes to Egypt. This is God's plan for him. And I will also surely bring you up again. Now, not Jacob personally, right? I mean, you know, he's going to go down into land. He's going to die there. But his people, his family, his generations, genealogies, and all to go with it, all these people, ultimately, he's going to bring them back into the land, a promise, but not yet. So at this point, he needs them to go to Egypt. So I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. Now, the idea is, that Jacob's old. Jacob's been old for a very long time. Remember, a long time when he was blind and he could hardly see, and he's been going through a difficult time for a long time. But this time he is getting much older. However, he's still going to live there a number of years before he actually finally dies. Anyway, he seems to go on forever, his life. But the point is, the idea of putting your fingers on your eyes is like Joseph is going to be there when Jacob dies, and he's going to be the one that closes the eyes, is the picture there. When the person passes, they die, you close the eye. Usually the firstborn or a significant, important person would be the one that would do that. He's actually saying, Jacob, when you die, your son Joseph, who you love, when you die, he's going to be the one that close your eyes when you pass away. That's what he's referring to there. So death is in the picture of Jacob, because he knows he's getting older and all that goes with it. So then you get into verses 5 through 27. And so 5 through 27, we're going to start reading some names. So let me go through them because it takes a little bit, but it won't take too long through them. I think you'll see they're not too difficult. First he starts out, then Jacob arose from Beersheba. Again, he's been told by God to go to Egypt. Everything's good if you do. And the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the carts which Pharaoh had sent for him to carry him. In other words, remember, Pharaoh said he sent all these carts up there to make the trip easier for them to come down. Because remember, they were not just moving on horses or camels or donkeys. Donkeys were very popular then. They had a lot of stuff. So maybe the camels would be holding and donkeys were carrying their stuff. But they wanted them to have carts for the people, for the wives, the women, and the old and all that. So he made it their trip a lot smoother. Thank you to the Pharaoh in that regard. He has such high regard for Joseph that he was more than willing to do that for his family, right? So verse 6, so they took their livestock and their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with them. Like you said, the idea of the livestock will become a question that near the end of the chapter. It's going to become a challenge, but Joseph kind of gives them a little bit of a how to address the Pharaoh when you see him, because there's going to be a time where they will meet him. So that's important. I think you get that builds up. So we're time-wise, if you chronologically, we're about 1876 BC, and that's the time that they go into the land. Remember, a couple of months ago, we had a chart that talked about that date as the date that they go into Egypt. Remember, they're going to be there 430 years. 30 years are going to be good and happy while Joseph is still around and all that, but then he dies, and then they're going to continue to grow, but then they're going to actually become more of slaves while they're in Egypt. So it's going to start out really good, and it's going to end up kind of sad, but that's all God's plan. He's going to work them out to become a nation. Verse 7, and his son's sons, his daughters, and his son's daughters. So when he talks about his daughters and has Esther, the only one it's named is Dinah, right? Dinah is the only one who's actually mentioned earlier in any of the chronologies, or genealogies, I should say, that talk about their family. And so, but it has an S there, so it gives the impression that maybe there were other daughters besides Dinah that were born, but they just don't mention them. They're just not named. So his daughters, his son's daughters, and his descendants, he brought with him to Egypt. Again, the whole clan is going there, moving that way. Verse 8, then he's going to start. Now these were the names of the children of Israel, Jacob and his sons, who went to Egypt. Reuben was Jacob's firstborn. So if you look at, let's just look at just briefly the second handout, the one that's mostly bluish in color. So this is the names that are actually named in the text. And so that's every one of the names are actually brought out there. And so we're going to go through reading the text, but this is how it lays it out. He lays it out by Leah first. His first wife, which he wanted it to be Rachel, remember, but that didn't quite work out with Laban and all that the trickiness and the sneakiness he did with him. So Leah, and then it's going to be Leah's handmaid, and then eventually it will be Rachel, and then it will be her handmaid. And that's the organization of the chart. So that's how the text lays it out in that very way. Verse 9. So actually, I should point out there, verse 8, he does say children of Israel. So he's referring to everybody, not just children, anybody and everybody. This is like Moses' first time of, when we say children of Israel, now we often think, well, the Israelites and the people of Israel, the whole nation of Israel. And it is that. It's the first time he actually calls them the children of Israel, and it does mean all the people of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That they're not a nation yet, but at least Moses is acknowledging them as the children of Israel. That term would be used many times later on in the Old Testament, of course. Verse 9, the sons of Reuben were Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. So he's starting to go through their names and who they're born to them. The sons of Simeon were Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Johar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. Why did it mention the son of a Canaanite woman? I have no idea. As nobody seemed to know. But he does. So he mentions it. This was done, made through a Canaanite woman. He just points that out. It's just one of those extra details. But I don't think it's random. I think every time you talk about things like this, it's the kind of thing to understand that every genealogy is tied to its history. It's tied to its contemporary. It's tied to the time that it's written. So he's just pointing out that, yeah, they married Canaanites. And that's that part of it's pretty important, because this is why God is actually taking them out of Canaan right now to go to Egypt, so that they will not be influenced by their environment like they are in Canaan. So they are being influenced there. So that's one of the reasons, I think, for why it's there, is just to point out the fact that as long as they continue in Canaan, they're going to be influenced by the Canaanites. But in Egypt, because of their racism, I guess we're going to have to call it, because of their haughtiness, and everybody else is, you know, Egyptians think they're greater than everybody else, and all these other people, low lives and all that, they kind of separated them. It allowed them to be separate, so they were not influencing any of the children of Jacob at all. None of them are going to be influenced by the Egyptians. They get to grow and mature in the Lord, right, separately from the environment around them, which is important. So he mentions the Canaanite woman, I think, more than anything, to point out that if they continued to live in Canaan, they would be influenced by more Canaanites, right? Verse 11, so the sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. Now, those names you're going to see many times when you go on later on in the books of Moses, because when you're talking about the priests, and the families of the priests, the three families, and they have their various placement around the tabernacle, what they did, and various functions. So their names will come up, obviously, later on. Verse 12 is kind of interesting, because you're going to remember a couple of chapters ago. The sons of Judah were Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But then it says in preface, but and Onan, remember, died in Canaan. So we got this, they're being named, but they're also being pointed out the fact that they have already died. So we're talking about people in Canaan moving to Egypt, but obviously and Onan didn't make the trip to Egypt, but they are still the children of Jacob, so that they are mentioned. Then he says that sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamuel. So he does name their grandchildren one of them. So he's building it, and all these numbers add up, right? 13, so the sons of Issachar were Tola, Puva, Job, and Shimron. And of course, this is not the same Job as the book of Job. It's the same name, but it's obviously different. Some have it as Iob. I don't know how you do Oib. I'm not sure how he would pronounce it. It was Iob, but most likely it's Job is the actual name. And 13 there. 14, the sons of Zebulun were Shered, Elon, it's not Elon Musk, and Jaleel, right? So you get that. So that's the name of these. So just going through the people, the 12 tribes, the 12 sons, and then their children. Again, broken down by the various mothers, where they came from. Then he says in verse 15, these were the sons of Leah, whom he bore to Jacob in Padan Haram with his daughter Dinah. So his son, Elwin, the daughter Dinah. So he's kind of adding with the daughter. It's still part of, it's still added as part of the numbers. She's still addressed as part of the 70. All the persons, his sons and his daughters, were 33. So on that second chart again, the big blue here, the blue one where it says 33, he actually tells you how many there are. And you can go through and count them. I wouldn't do that now. You wouldn't hear half of what I'm saying if you're counting them all. But you get the idea. There's 33 names that we just read through, and they are all the sons or daughter, because of Dinah, of Leah. And that's an important concept. Then he continues on, verse 16. And the sons of Gad were Ziphion, Haggai, Shunai, Esbon, Eri, Eradi, and Eri. So I'm not even sure that all those names are easily pronounced, but or they really would like the way I pronounce their names. But there we are. Those are the sons of Gad. He's going down the line. 17. The sons of Asher were Jimna, Ishua, Ishi, Berei, or Bera, and Sarah, their sister. So names a sister again. Again, most of the time these are all sons. And the sons of Berei were Heber and Michiel. So he's naming their some grandsons. So only a few grandsons are named, four or six total grandsons, but most of them are the sons of their of the 12 tribes, of the 12 sons of Jacob. These were the, verse 18, these were the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. So again, looking at the chart, those names I just read, there are 16 in the second. So, I mean, He's letting you know there's a number there. We're headed towards a number. And of course, if you look in a chart, you can see where that number is going to be. But get the idea. Nothing is random in God's word. Every name matters and everyone counts. Every one of the names that we named actually will be counted in the total number. 19. So the sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, were Joseph and Benjamin. So we get that. It's his favorite wife, and he only had two, and they were the youngest of them all. They were right at the end, so she names them. And verse 20, and to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim. So understand where Joseph is already in Egypt, and he's now had two children, and they're in Egypt. So he's not going to be part of the 70, but he will be kept part of the 70. He's not actually part of those coming down to Egypt. He's already there, right? And that's where the children were born. They're already there, so we'll build that down. So he said, whom Asenath, which would be his Egyptian wife, the daughter Potipharah, priest of On, born to him. So on the original first chart, I had the little chart, the little map. And so On, I think, is where he's living, in On. That's the father-in-law, the priest of On in Egypt. It would be the father-in-law of Joseph. So I point that out there. Actually, he'll name that as he goes on. He's in On. So that's the location, because you're going to find that Joseph is down there. He's going to go up to Goshen to meet his parents, to meet Jacob and the family. Okay, so verse 20. And to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore him. That's the one I just read. So get the idea. They're already in Egypt. 21. The sons of Benjamin were Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Nanam, Eha, Rosh, Muppin, Huppim, and Ard. So he goes through those names. These were the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. Again, if you're looking at the blue chart, so he's named, you got 33, 16, and 14. So we're building that number up. Okay. 23. The sons of Dan were Hushim. That's it. One guy. Dan is a very interesting person to do a study on. If you ever do a study on Dan, you find out that there's a, in many places, he's not even mentioned as a son. He will be ultimately in the end, when you look at prophetically, he does come back as something that's one of the tribes, and he's going to be blessed and all that. But in the meanwhile, there's a lot of lists that name the tribes of Israel, and Dan is missing. And I have several actually charts that deal with that and why that's the case. All here, all we know is that he only names one son. Son 24, the sons of Naphtali were Jezeel, Gunai, Jezeel, and Shillem. So he's naming them. These were, verse 25, these were the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, seven persons in all. So you got the 33, the 14, right? Or it's 33, 16, 14, and 7. If you do a little bit of calculation there, you got 70 people, and that's how I tried to express it here, the 33, 16. And so that 70 is going to become, we'll talk about that more and more a little bit as we go on. So there's 70 people that are named there. Now look at verse 26. Now all the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body, besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons. But wait a minute, didn't you just say 70? Yep, I will say. And he'll say in the next verse, he'll mention 70. So he is distinguishing between those that came down from Canaan into Egypt versus the whole family. When you're talking about the whole family, it's 70. Even though and Onan are dead, they're still counted as part of the 70 because they were the sons of Jacob. They're still counted. So on the blue chart, I have a point there. Genesis 46, the note at the bottom there, 66 descendants excludes Onan, because they're already dead, and Joseph and his two sons, so that gives you five. Well, wait a minute, but we're only four away, but then they do include Dinah, so it takes it down to give you the 70. The point is that he's trying to distinguish between those that actually come down from Canaan into Egypt, and, of course, the whole family overall is going to be 70. That's why there's a 66 mentioned here, and then when you get to the next verse, 27, we're going to read now, there's actually 70. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him, right, in Egypt were two persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70, including those who were already in Egypt. So that's the number 70 is the total number. Basically, you're going to say the entire nation is going to be built on the 70 there. And that's the point there. Even though some of them had died, that's going to be the point. So a couple of things that stand out to me when I think about this 70, you know, sometimes you see certain numbers are more significant than others. And when you see a pattern, and there are obviously patterns that I think that are standing out. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 8. I'm going to read this verse, and I want you to think about a couple concepts related to the number 70. Deuteronomy 32, 8. God, Moses said, when the Most High divided their inheritance to the nations, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set up the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of the children of Israel. So when you go back to Genesis chapter 10 in the table of nations, how many nations were there? Somebody say 70, right? 70, right? So now we're talking about Israel, and he's talking about there being 70. And then later on, when he sets up leaders in the nation, when they are after the Exodus and they get out and they're in the wilderness and all that, he set up 70 leaders, did he not? And I think about the idea of whenever they, how many years were they in Babylon? 70 years. So it's not an insignificant number. And every time this happens, as 70 happens, the next thing is, it's like the end of something and the beginning of something. Beginning of something new. Every time you see a 70, Babylonian captivity, they come out of it and they build the temple again. They're new people. They get to come back to the land. And the 70 elders earlier with Moses, they're become the leaders of the nation of Israel. And the 70 nations that are named in the table of nations in chapter 10 is the beginning of the flood was just came, everything was destroyed. These are the beginning of the nations and all that goes with it. So God's involved with this. And I think about Jesus early on when he sent out the 2x2, he sent 70 people out. He's beginning his ministry and all that goes, everything's new. So you get this 70 comes up, I think, so many times representing that idea. So anyway, so 70 is a significant number. I don't overwork numbers, but when there's an obvious a pattern, and the pattern is 70, followed by it's the beginning of something new, it obviously means something significant. It's a big thing for Israel, something new is happening to them. From this 70, an entire nation will be born. 28, and this is the emotional meeting that they finally had with Jacob and Joseph. Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph. Now, it seems like Judah likes to do this. He likes to send somebody out. Before he came back to Esau, he was afraid, so he sent somebody out to feel the water and see how it was going to go. He seems to always send he seemed like he should just trust that everything's okay, but he always wants to send a representative first to make sure it's okay. It seems to be attitude. 28 again. Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen. So maybe it's to get instruction how to get there. They're coming down from Canaan. They need to go along basically the Mediterranean to the south to get to Goshen. And they came to the land of Goshen. That was where they were supposed to be. Again, this is 22 years that the father Jacob and Joseph have seen each other. So Joseph made ready his chariot, went up to Goshen, and I say up, and he puts that there as on the map. I think he's coming from the little dot that says on, and he's moving up to Ramses in that area, and then in Goshen in particular. Ramses is a city. Oftentimes you see him almost interchangeably saying Goshen and Ramses, but Ramses is really a city, and Goshen is the bigger we'll call it the county, and then Spokane Valley is the little city like Ramses, right? That's the idea. Okay, 29. So Joseph made ready his chariot, went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. He's calling him Israel instead of Jacob because it's now in faith. He's coming in faith. And he presented himself to him, and he fell on his neck, and he wept on each other for quite a while. I mean, you can only imagine this wasn't like, oh, good to see you. Oh, no big deal. No, it was a big deal. You can imagine a lot of tears of joy and all that goes with it. They wept for a long time over that. Again, he was 17 when he was considered dead, considered killed, Joseph was, right? So from Jacob's standpoint, since 17 to now, what, 39, he's missed him a lot of years, thinking that he was dead all along. Verse 30, and Israel said to Joseph, now let me die. I mean, it seemed like there's an obsession with him dying, but now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive. He said, okay, my life is complete. It is enough. Everything is good now. He's saying positive things. I'm ready to die. But he's not. He's going to live a couple more decades. That's amazing. Everything seems to be thinking about his death with Jacob, but he continues to live a long time. It's pretty funny, I think, in that regard. Now, verse 31. So Joseph is going to tell his family the plans of Goshen. He must have known about Goshen, but there's a little detail here. It's called the Pharaoh. So he's going to have to address Pharaoh in a proper way. Verse 31, then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up to tell Pharaoh and say to him, my brothers and those of my family's house who were in the land of Canaan have come to you. So, and many actually think that Joseph is up north. The Pharaoh is up north, and just to the side is where the actual Israelites are going to be going. So they're going to be close by where the Pharaoh lives. The Pharaoh doesn't always live in the same place in Egypt. If you go through history, there's a couple times they move around the different cities, not like a one place, always is the capital. So it is a little bit of variance there. But anyway, where they're moving to is going to be close to where the Pharaoh is at. And so Joseph is talking to them, giving an instruction here. 32. The men are shepherds. He's acknowledging this. Joseph is acknowledging this. The men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock, and they have brought up their flocks, their herds, and all that they have. So he acknowledges that they're shepherds, but he doesn't want them to actually say that to the Pharaoh. He wants them to say, we're herdsmen. They're okay with cattle to a certain degree, but boy, don't let it be sheep. Because an Egyptian thinks of sheep in a very negative sense. He's going to point that out. Verse 33, so it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? Don't say shepherd. Like that's what he's saying. Don't learn from me. You're herdsmen. You're not going to say what you're herding. You're just going to say you're a herdsman. You don't want the name sheep at all. 34, the last verse. And you shall say your servant's occupation has been with livestock from your youth even unto now, but we also and our fathers, that we may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd, so he's not, don't say this part, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. And that's how the chapter ends. So you get the idea. Say you're a herdsman, but don't actually use the word shepherd, because he knows that that would kind of offend the Pharaoh. And he probably wouldn't be too pleased with hearing him say something like that. So that's kind of where it ends. So the story is very simple. So many people coming from Canaan into Egypt, and they finally have this is the real reunion right here between the father, Jacob, and Joseph, and all goes with it. And I see Genesis is such an amazing book, because it has so many patterns that are set forth in Genesis that you see laid out. I'm talking about the 70 and stuff like that. But in the end, it's obvious that God is in control. Even though there are some of the sons that die, they're still counted because they're still the sons of Jacob. And so they become part of the 70 and all that goes with it. So hopefully it was a pleasing chapter. I mean, there's a lot of names there, but pleasing in the sense of knowing it was a good, happy ending that Jacob and Joseph got to see each other after so many years, and what a blessing that is. So